Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 Bacon Bundle. Because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the Bacon Cheese Slider, 1921 Bacon Cheese Slider, or Chicken Bacon Ranch Slider. And also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 Bacon Bundle. White Castle. Follow your Crave.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Pitaya.
Hi, everyone. I'm Jenny, and this is Hyphenated, a podcast about living in the hyphen. And I am here today with an award-winning documentary filmmaker and co-director and co-founder at O Cinema. And most of you will know him because he is one of the creators behind Mucho, Mucho Amor, The Legend of Guatemegalo, which was one of the top documentaries on Netflix for a very long time. It was talked about so much, especially within our community. Please welcome Kareem Tabsh.
Yay! Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you, and thank you for wearing a Miami Heat hat.
anything to cover up this bald spot.
Hi, Yomi.
Anything.
Let go Heat.
That's
You're
right.
Like, no, let's not go Heat. It's very hot there.
I love to tell you I know much about Miami Heat, but I know that it is Miami and that there's pink on it. And that's basically the decision process that I bought this hat from. So
it's very relatable because I don't know anything about sports.
Same.
Now, before we, you know, delve into Mucho, Mucho Amor and talking about our favorite Guatemegalo, I want to ask you first about what led you to becoming a documentary filmmaker. Like, how did you get your start, and talk to us also about your production company?
Yeah, totally. So how I got my start. So, like, you know, I'm a first generation American child of Cuban and Lebanese immigrants who basically said I had two options. I was going to become a doctor or a lawyer. And they clearly thought much more of me than of what I was capable of. Because I was like, nah, I don't like school. I don't like people. I'm not going to school for that long. I always like to joke is that they pinned the hopes on me. My older brother was kind of the troublemaker. And my younger brother was kind of dopey. And they're like, Kareem's like the good kid who doesn't say bad words. He's just going to be somebody. Niño bueno. Fast forward.
Niño bueno.
Very clearly, they were very bad at this. both of my brothers have like master's degrees and are like, you know, families, and I'm like working this like, you know, weird industry. But that's my long way of saying I had no idea what I wanted to do for a very long time. And I got into film on the exhibition side. I started working at film festivals, and I love that. And then slowly but surely realized there wasn't really like an art house movie theater in Miami. And so with Vivian Martel, we co-founded O Cinema and brought Kevin on board, and Matt and other folks, Rick, and helped build that up.
Because, yeah, I mean, for those who don't know, Kevin, our producer on the podcast, King Carajo's Kevin, also used to work at O Cinema. And also, I remember, like, I got to hold, like, auditions there for, like, projects. And I used to, hilariously enough, participate a lot with the film festival that was held there called I'm Not Gonna Move to LA, which was like a monthly festival where they would screen Miami filmmakers' works. And so I was always at O Cinema for those, either because I was an actor or because it was stuff that I had produced. It's truly a magical place. And it's how I became friends with Kevin to begin with. So this is like a nice full circle thing.
And so after doing that for a while, I was like, you know, it's great championing other people's stories and like the films that they want to do. But there's like so many, like I'm weird and I like weird things and weird people and weird stories. Mm-hmm. And I live in Florida, which is like, you know, the epicenter of weird. It's a wellspring of inspiration here. And so I was like, well, my first short was about the world's most pampered cat. It's like, oh, I have this idea. And friends of mine, we're like, yeah, you should do that. You could become a filmmaker. And that was like a really crazy notion, but like honestly having other people inspire me and like almost give me permission that I could be a storyteller after having been a film curator for such a long time was what I needed to get started. And so that's, you know, it started as a hobby, self-funded, crowdfunding. First short was Cherry Pop, which was great. It had a nice little life.
Actually, I saw one of your very first documentaries before knowing who you even were, before What the McGallo. Correct me if I'm wrong, it was called Dolphin Lover, yes.
Dolphin Lover, which I should explain, is a true story about a man who had a romantic and sexual relationship with a captive bottlenose dolphin in 1970s Florida. It's a great movie. It pairs well with a bottle of wine and a fun evening. That's what I like to describe it as.
I'll tell you what, I saw it twice.
Jenny, it's just too much about you right there. Too much about you.
Because, well, you know what? It's my husband's fault because we stumbled upon it the first time we watched it. Because it was fascinating because I, too, am weird. And I love learning about people and their psychology and why they do what they do. So, again, I'm also I love animals, not in that way, but I've always read up on dolphins. I love dolphins. I think dolphins especially became a hot topic during the Elian Gonzalez times. And so I was like, wow, they're very intelligent creatures. And I'm like, oh, they rape people. Okay. Interesting. That's why I was fascinated. And it's why Dolphin Lover drew me in, because I was like, what? And then my husband, when we had friends over at one point, he's like, you got to watch this documentary. So, you know, we watched it with like a bigger group of friends. But yeah, no, I completely see why. And I think that's so fucking cool, because who else is going to tell these stories, right?
Yeah.
And let's be honest, I know I'm not the only one who must have tuned in for the same reasons. Like, what? This man in Florida in the 70s in love with a dolphin?
Honestly, I cannot tell you how, I mean, it's almost the piece of work that I've made that comes up almost more often than anything else. In some ways, maybe even more often than mucho, mucho more. Or at least when people like make the connection, it's always like surprising, like, you did that? And I'm like, yeah. And I'm like, oh, wow, that's amazing
me.
That people have discovered. Like, yeah, that's me. I'm not the dolphin lover. I just made the movie about the dolphin lover.
But it was so well made. It was very, very well made. I think, of course, the topic is fascinating and it's going to get giggles from people of all ages. But, you know, it's a very well-made documentary. So when I found out you were also going to be doing Mucho, Mucho More, I was like, oh, my God, this is going to be absolutely incredible.
Thanks.
When did Mucho Mucho Amor air again? Was it now 3 years ago?
Oh man, it's almost three. So it premiered in 2020. It came out right in the midst, a few months into the pandemic.
That is,
which was kind of like awesome because it was like needed. Like, you know, Walter's that kind of like, he's so much magic and joy and love, and like,
I know
the world is a, you know, a garbage can on fire as it usually is, but particularly so during the pandemic. And so it was like a nice little pick me up. So yes, it's a little over two years now since it's been out.
Freaking Mucho Mucho Amor was a masterpiece to me. I grew up like many people watching What the McGallo with my abuela. My abuela took his word like more than the Bible. And me and my grandma are both Scorpios. Our birthdays are 2 days apart. And so I feel like we were very connected in that. So like every time the horoscope would come out for Scorpio, she would like share it with me. And so when it came out, it was a very emotional experience because it's a story that I didn't really know. To me, What the McGallo was such a mystery persona. And I'm like, what is their story?
Yeah.
How did they get here? So I would love to know how that documentary came to be.
So, you know, very kind of similarly, I had the same Walter McGallo experience of just like him being a constant presence in my home, right? Like in the culture, like he was there. You couldn't kind of turn a TV on any day and not see him, or in a newspaper or in a magazine. And you know, it's one of those things that I thought was like particularly in Miami too. There's that moment where like, I'm like, I equate, this has happened twice to me. One was Walter Mercado. I thought it was like a Miami thing, you know, like he's everywhere, but it's Miami. Of course, somebody like this would be famous in Miami. The other experience I had that with was Pitbull. And I remember I remember being in a cab in San Francisco and Pitbull's playing. And I'm like, you guys know who this is? I thought this was a guy who like sold his tapes at like Flea Market USA on 79th Street in Miami. And only people in Miami played him. So the discovery that Walter McCullough is this huge cultural thing as I got older was fascinating. But I also was like, who is this amazing magician? And so the way it came to be, I had made my first feature documentary was called The Last Resort. It was about 1970s Miami Beach when it was the largest enclave of Jewish retirees in the country. I made it with my friend Dennis Scholl. It was a small film, but it did really, really well. It played in New York for a month and in South Florida for like 3 months. It was like really great. And then it was like follow up, like, oh, what do I want to do next? I was in New York and my buddy Andrew Evia, who was one of the people who helped get me started in making films, said, oh, do you know Alex Fumero? I'm like, I know of him, you know, don't know him in person. He's like, well, he's an exec at HBO. You should meet, you guys were going to get along like a house of fire. So we had like lunch at Bryant Park and he's like, you know, we're talking about the movie, The Last Resort that I had just made. He's like, what are you doing next? And I'm like, or he's like, oh, what do you have coming up that you're excited about? I said, you know, what I'm really excited about is I'm going to Walter Mercado's estate sale in Miami. Ah.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's Mix and Match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
At Capella University, you'll get support from people who care about your success. From before you enroll to after you graduate, pursue your goals knowing help is available when you need it. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.
We all heard about that one, by the way. I was like, why can't I be there?
it was like getting invited to the inauguration or
bro,
like for
real.
This funeral. Like that was, this would have been, this was more exciting than either of those things, you know?
Yeah.
I'm like, what? And just because like vieja chismosa that I am, I just wanted to poke around and see what Walter Mercado had in his house. And I said, you know, I'm going to that. I'm really excited about it. And I wanted to, like, you know, I wanted to buy like a cape or some tchotchkes or something. And
hell
Alex
yeah.
said, right? Like, who doesn't? Alex said to me, man, if there's ever a documentary I would love to be part of it, something on Walter Mercado. And I'm like, well, I want to buy a cape, but I also kind of want to see if there's a way to like meet the family or connect. How can I get to Walter? Mm-hmm. And he's like, well, listen, if you make connection, let me know because I would love to help you with it. So it's a very long story. I'll try to make it very short. I'm very verbose, as you can tell.
No, this is great. This is very detailed and necessary.
I go to the estate sale. I meet Walter's. I see Walter's house, his condo in Miami. It's exactly what you'd imagine it to be, Walter style, but in Miami. I meet one of his nieces. I give her kind of like, you know, the quick elevator pitch. I'm like, yeah, I'm a documentary filmmaker. I love to make. She's like, oh, okay. Well, you know, I could reach out to my uncle and see if he's interested. You know, we'll see. And I kind of like give her my card or something. And then I go back 2 days later, the last day of the sale, which is when you get the real good deals anywhere.
Claro, always.
And I go in I kind of chat with her again. She's like, you know, I think you'd be really into it. She gives me her number, her email address. She's like, send me a note. I come back and talk to Alex about it. And we schedule what would be our first production call for this idea of making a documentary. And half an hour before that, he gets a phone call from a friend and former coworker, Christina Costantini. She's like, I hear you're obsessed with Walter Mercado. So am I. I want to make a film about him. And Alex was like, you're not going to believe this. I'm already making a movie about him. And making it with director Kareem Tapsch. And we're talking in 30 minutes, but I think y'all will get along. So like, maybe we should see if there's something there. And so Alex kind of like Yenta the matchmaker puts us together. And we have this 45-minute phone call. And at the end of it, we decide, never having met in person, that we are going to make this film. And we're going to co-direct it. Now all we have to do is convince Walter.
That's all we we just gotta convince Walter.
All we have to do is convince Walter.
Ay, Dios mío.
But you know, we send an email, kind of lay out our vision, we kind of go through our pitch, how we're gonna present it to him, rehearse it, and we have a call set up. And I remember this call so vividly. It was like Walter and his office, which was like his assistant Willie is in the film, his secretary Wilma, some of his nieces, and like being a Latino, I could say this, as we all understand this, everyone talks at once all over each other. So it was like calling into like, the only thing you could describe it is calling into like a birdhouse where like, toda la cotorra, like, wah, 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 wah. And, like it was like a cacophony. And then
like the tiki room in Disneyland?
Like the tiki room in Disneyland. Exactly right. Less music, more loud. And we kind of, it gets quiet. They're like, let us, and we give our pitch. We talk about everything we want to do. And it's very, it's like, at that point, it's a pin drop. And then Walter says, okay, I like this idea, but I only have one question.
Oh my God.
Like, he's like, what are your astrological signs? I have to tell you.
What a legend.
That of all the things we could imagine that would have come up, and this says a lot about how we were not necessarily prepared, right? This is the last thing we expected. I was like, oh, I'm a Libra. Christina's a Libra. Alex, unfortunately, is a Sagittarius. And I guess that was the right answer. Because after he said that, he's like, okay, I will do it.
No me diga.
I mean, it was that simple to start.
Thank God none of you were Scorpios.
That's it. Exactly. Thank God. Right.
Can you imagine?
Like, one of us could have been a Leo, and it would have, and then there would be no mucho more today.
But hold up. So, like, do you think he was calculating like the chemistry between all of you? What is Walter's sign again?
I always forget this. Don't kill me. I think Walter is an Aries. This is the other big secret. Although being
Pisces,
he's a Pisces. Okay, being a team of filmmakers and made a film about Walter Mercado, the world's most famous astrologer. None of us are really believers in astrology, so I can't remember when the hell anyone's sign is or what it means, but. Obviously, he knew it well.
He did. Apparently, it was a good combo. And
yeah,
could you imagine? Like, if I don't know, what if you?
He would always say like, things like that, though. Too, he's like, "Oh,
wow.
tu pareja, and your boyfriend, or your to Christina and your husband, what sign is he?" He's like, "Oh, very passionate, or oh, lots of trouble." And I was like, "I don't know what any of this means. I don't know any of it, and I can't remember any of it because I don't know this stuff." I'm like, "Shit." I should like walk around with a pad writing stuff down.
Bro, I would have. I'd be like, Martin, please, when my life, where's it going?
You know, the funny thing is like in the process of making it, we all went in saying, you know, nobody asked for an astrological reading. Nobody asked for life advice. Like, absolutely not. It's completely unprofessional. This is his job. Don't do this.
Yeah, yeah.
And in fact, I think on our first shoot, somebody kind of did. And then we were like, oh, pulled her aside. Don't ever do that again. But very discreetly. But so none of us did it. But slowly but surely, Walter read all of our natal charts for us in that he offered. And so I have my natal chart done by Walter that I have to get framed and like dedicated.
Dude.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
It was amazing.
That is an honor.
Yeah, it is.
Bro, like, wow, okay. I'm just like fangirling and just also really jealous, but continue.
I mean, that honestly, like, that's exactly what I was for like the 2.5 years that we were making the movie. I was like fangirling every day.
So you were with him for 2 years. How often were you filming?
We were probably every other month, maybe more or less. Walter lived in San Juan, Puerto Rico, and I live in Miami. Christina had just relocated to LA. Alex was moving from New York to LA. So it was probably about once every other month or so we would go for a week to 10 days and shoot with him. Or maybe once every 3 months. I mean, it kind of varied, but we were there fairly often.
Yeah.
And spent quite a bit of time with him. I mean, you know, I would love to be able to tell you some kind of crazy nightmare story because it would be make for a good story. But the reality is it was like a sheer pleasure every moment you were with him. He was amazing, funny. I mean, really, really funny. Like just funnier than you can imagine. And incredibly smart. I really think probably the smartest person I've ever met.
Wow.
Certainly the most well-read person I've ever met. Like, his house, which you see in the film, is like, you know, always over the top. But there's kind of like a more casual living room upstairs, and it was just like all the walls were like covered in books. He must have had, I mean, not an inventor. He must have had like 10,000 books, like, and on every subject you imagine, like world history, culture, art, sexuality, spirituality, religion. And he was such an intelligent person. I think that ultimately was kind of his brilliance is how he mixed all of those into this like particular one striking image. But every time, like every moment we spent with him was like a sheer delight. He was the best. The best. But you know, we went in making this movie about like this childhood icon of our culture, this magician. And what we didn't realize is like we were actually making a movie about aging. Like, you know, in the 2 years or 2.5 years we spent with him, we went in from meeting somebody who was like, first of all, he did not talk about his age or ever admit his age. But he was like spry and going up and down the stairs. He'd throw himself on the floor to play with his dog. And he was like getting on a maca in a hammock. And he'd do those things. Mm-hmm. And you know, by the time we were done, he could barely walk.
Oh my gosh. Like, and you witnessed that.
And we witnessed it, which was, you know, difficult. And when you're spending that much time with someone and at that point in their life where their body is slowly shutting down, it's, mm-hmm. you know, you get incredibly close. We became incredibly close. Alex and I were pallbearers at his funeral.
Oh my goodness. I did not know that.
It was an incredible experience and relationship to have. And then you realize like, you're making a movie about Guatemala, but you're making a movie about your abuelos. You're making a movie about, you know, a generation that's changing and a shifting of a guard and culture.
Oh my God, Kareem.
So it was a lot.
Destroying me right now.
Yeah, you know, it was
I felt it when I wonderful. Watched it, but I couldn't put words to it. And it's like, I'm like, why was this so emotional for me? And I realize now, yeah, it was also a documentary on our grandparents.
Yeah.
You know, my grandparents are no longer here. They passed in 2016, you know, and it's like this generation that I personally try to still keep alive in my videos. And I know a lot of parents kind of like they're scared because all of this is kind of going away.
Yeah.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. In fact, Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/podcastfree. All lowercase, shopify.com/podcastfree, shopify.com/podcastfree.
Yeah, it's funny. You said your grandmother was born 2 days before you. My grandmother's birthday is a day before mine.
Wow.
And my grandmother is still alive. She literally just turned 97.
Bless
She's still
her.
Sharp as hell. Physically, Aye. Like she's lost most of all of her mobility in the last couple of years.
See.
But she's still really sharp and really and can be really, really sassy. And she actually reminds me of Walter in that way. And that even though when he was slowing down, he was still very sassy. but I hear you. I mean, it's in a lot of the kind of movies I like to make and the characters I'm drawn to, it's about older folks, but it's also like in telling one story, you can kind of tell a larger one. So in the story of Walter Mercado, this icon of our culture, you know, we can tell a larger story about this amazing generation, right? And somebody who within that generation is a huge pioneer, right? He was so ahead of his time. In representation and just the way he embraced the world.
Guatemala was a queer icon, even though, you know, he never came out as queer. Working with him those years, did he ever express his thoughts on modern day LGBTQ+ issues? Did he ever like just brush upon the subject at all, even if he didn't try to make it personal to him.
Yeah, you know, I think it you know, going into making the film, I mean, as a young queer person myself, when I saw Walter on TV, I had this sense of simpatico. I don't know that I knew what gay was at that point, but I think I saw Walter on all his otherness, right? And I somehow related to that, right? There was like a synergy. And like me, there was thousands and thousands of other queer folks around Latin America and the U.S. who had a similar experience in watching Walter. I had, going into it, had hoped that, you know, Walter was going to finally come out. He was going to express his sexuality. And I think what we really realized is that Walter, you know, was of a different generation. Uh-huh. Where you didn't talk about those things. You didn't talk about them if you're heterosexual. You mean you didn't, there wasn't folks who were telling you who, you know, who they slept with or when they, how they, you know, there was just generationally, you didn't talk about that. And moreover, it was dangerous, right? Like, he was in a small island in Puerto Rico. If he would have come out, it would have not just been the end of his career. It would have also been, could have put his life in danger. I did have a conversation with him. We were filming, and the same week that we were down there, a young Puerto Rican queer trap artist was murdered, seemingly because of their sexuality. And I mentioned it to him, and, you know, he thought it was awful. And he was always really supportive of queer folks. He always said they're so brave, and he loved the idea that people were coming out and that we should be embracing. And it was a real kind of hard thing to grapple, because it's like, here's somebody who is so queer, right? Like, embodies such a queerness to him, and didn't, you know, never articulated in words. And I think that that was kind of the reality for me, was like, you know, Walter did it always. He didn't say it. He just showed it who he was, right? Mm-hmm. From his arrival on the scene, he lived his life as authentically as he could on his own terms, pushing the boundaries of gender norms of, you know, what men were allowed to do or say or dress or speak like or live, you know, always. I mean, you know, there was archival we uncovered of him talking about like this, the kind of like the gender binary that was 30 years ago, right? Like, now we talk about this in places in progressive circles, and folks are like, oh yeah, we're all genders on a binary. Walter was doing that decades before. So in essence, even though he didn't necessarily put a label on it or you know, march down the pride parade or self-identified in a vocal way, he was always who he was. And in doing so, he was always encouraging others to be who they are. And that was the message that he spread for like decades, right? His message was one of love, of self-acceptance, of mutual acceptance, of like, be who you are, and who you are is wonderful enough, and you are loved, and I love you for who you are. And so in that, I think he's the most queer, most revolutionary figure that maybe has come out of Latin America in the last decades. And folks like truly me, tons of other queer folks in our culture are all the better for it.
You just worded it so wonderfully. And it's really interesting because so many of our families, and let's just be honest here, you know, they weren't all about that. They weren't about acceptance in that way, but then they all loved what did, which is fascinating. But I never once ever heard anyone, at least in my circles or my family, talk about how Wadid represented himself, or they never talked about what they thought his sexuality was or how he dressed. So I just always thought that was very interesting, because I'm like, would they have felt any differently had he actually said it out loud, vocally, you know?
Yeah.
But I think he was still an icon for the queer community and an activist in his own way by simply existing and allowing himself to be who he was.
Yeah, totally. No, I think, you know, we always stand on the shoulders of the giants who came before us, and the way that they paved the path for us varies, right? And there's not one way towards acceptance. There's not one way towards building a better world. Like, we need all the ways. And Walter's way was maybe not talking about it, because maybe he knew that that was going to shut out a large segment of the population, you know, which was, and, you know, still is, very conservative, very Catholic. And so by not necessarily doing that, but by still kind of coming out and challenging our preconceived notions of masculinity and femininity, of behavior, of language, of dress, of make, like, and always doing it with this message of like promoting acceptance of one another and of yourselves and doing it centering in love. I think it really kind of paved the way for folks like us, at the very least, to be, for a lot of folks, I would say, to like feel like we weren't the only ones out there. Mm-hmm. And we've come such a long way. We've come such a long way as a community. We've come such a long way as
a
country, as a world, in this, you know, and we have a long way to go still. But, you know, we get folks like Walter who were pioneers and kind of making it better. And now, like, it's all each one of our jobs to make it better for the next folks who come around.
Absolutely. So please talk to us about what you have going on down the pipeline.
Yeah, totally. So the follow-up to the Walter Mercado experience into Making Mucho Mucho Amor, which is on Netflix if you haven't seen it, is that Alex Fumero and I started a company together. We started a production company inspired by that collaboration called Trojan Horse Media. And it's because we're focused on like Trojan horsing ideas, particularly of our culture, Latino culture.
Yep.
And that's kind of like what we did with Mucho Mucho Amor. I think it's like you come in expecting one thing and see another, and we're hoping to do that a couple of other times, and have done it a couple of other times. Earlier this year, we co-produced Menudo Forever Young for HBO mm-hmm. Max, which is a four-part docuseries about boy band Menudo. We released a couple of podcasts recently. I released one earlier this year called Paradise Lost: Crime in Miami. It's a true crime podcast about crazy South Florida crime stories. We had a great podcast called Crumbs about Emmy Olea, a Latina trans woman, and her experience in the dating scene. And Alex Fumero, my business partner, creative partner, just released a podcast that's coming out now called More Than a Movie, American Me. And it is a look at the iconic movie American Me, directed by Edward James Olmos in 1982, which is just celebrating its 30th anniversary, and was pivoted to be a game changer for Latinos in Hollywood and went in a different direction. But it's a fascinating deep dive into that movie. And coming up, we recently announced our forthcoming docuseries for Disney's Onyx, and that's called Gigante. And that is a four-part docuseries about the Latino origin story told through the lens of Sábado Gigante and Don Francisco. So we are just starting production on that one. And it's going to be a hoot.
Ay, Dios mío.
Yeah. It's going to be a good time.
I used to work at Univision, and I would, like, pass him all the time and, like, La Cuatro. And I've incorporated so much of my comedy based on, I mean, we did a spank show at UCB, me and the Chonga girls, called Wow Que Show, and it was about Sábado Gigante. Oh, and like the nostalgia of Latino television, specifically through like the Univision lens. So we had like Caso Cerrado and Primer Impacto. And like right now, me and Kevin just wrapped our big annual Halloween parody, and we're doing Scooby-Doo, Latino Scooby-Doo.
I love it.
And our villain is El Chacal de la Trompeta. Like, it's based on El Chacal de la Trompeta. So
that's amazing.
My whole life, I watched almost every Saturday with my abuela. And Laura, by the way, Laura Di Lorenzo, one of the Chonga girls, she used to be one of the little kids on Sábado Gigante.
Oh, funny. Funny. It's one of those things. It's like, it's like, it's part of our culture. It's also, like, folks didn't realize, it is the longest running variety television program in the history of television in the world. Like, longer than anything else. So we're super excited about doing the deep dive.
God, yes.
Mario, also known as Don Francisco, is super excited about opening up the vaults of like 53 years worth of like memories and amazing archival. And so we're stoked. So that's what's coming next. We got a bunch of other projects in development. So you will inevitably hear more about us, because as relentless Latinos, we will continue making noise.
And where can people follow you on social so they can be up to date on your projects?
So Instagram's the best one to follow me. Instagram and Twitter both are at Kareem Tapsch. So it's at KareemTabsch. And you can follow our company at TrojanHorse.media on Instagram.
Amazing. Well, we would definitely love to have you and Alex back to discuss Gigante when that comes out, because that's going to be Gigante. Un aplauso.
Gracias. Gracias.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. In fact, Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/podcastfree. All lowercase, shopify.com/podcastfree, shopify.com/podcastfree.